sidebar story here that occurred when they were trying to demonstrate Bluetooth technology. Bluetooth is one of the leaders that next year we should be seeing for wireless technology. They were trying to demonstrate how this would be used as a registration at one of the major hotels here and used to open up doors. Neither one of the two demonstrations worked because there was too much interference, and something that maybe those of us in the broadcasting field can really appreciate, that can be a real serious problem that's now beginning to rear its head.
Much to work on still, but much to look forward to as well. John Larish, thank you very much for checking in from Comdex. You are listening to Soundbites. And continuing the news with some other items in addition to our report from John Larish. Nick, I understand there's more virus and worm activity out there.
Yes, I think it's very important to remember never to open an attachment ever, even if you know the person. There are two new viruses, one called Navidad and the other called Hybris. Both of them infect Microsoft Office and Windows. So if you're not running Windows, or Outlook rather, and Windows. So if you're not running Outlook or you're not running Windows, just not off for the next 30 seconds. Both of them come to your system pretending to come from somebody you already know, or having hi. One message says hi, just testing email using a music file, not bad music, that sort of thing. So don't open any mail. From any attachments from anybody until you've checked with them that they really sent it. These viruses are going around more and more often. The ones particularly in Outlook are terrible, so be very careful what you do.
Meanwhile, David, good news for laptop and flat-screen desktop.
Fantastic news here. I mean, I myself wouldn't mind one of these new flat monitors because they take up so much less room. That's kind of redundant, isn't it?
Yeah, much less.
Much less? Anyway,
that's okay. We've established redundancy.
Anyway, it's very thin, and I've been jonesing for one of these for quite a while because I'd maybe be able to finally close my roll top desk. But what has happened is the manufacturers have more or less overproduced the components for this. And because of the high prices, now it's more or less for the end user made it a good thing because now the prices are starting to drop. They've already seen it drop from $546 to $489, and they're saying by the end of about fall it should be down to $466. So
for a 15-inch.
Yeah, for a 15-inch. And the 17-inches are coming out along with the 19-inch. Of course, like everything else, just when the VCRs first came out or the computers, they were awful high. But I think over time we're going to see them drop in price because folks like the thinness of these monitors, and you can put them just about on anybody's desk, and it doesn't take up the whole desk like a whole big monitor does nowadays.
Meanwhile, Steve, trouble of the G4 front, what's up?
Yeah, there appears to be a rare glitch, Apple is saying, in some of the gigabit G4s that were released at the Macworld last July. Apparently, the front panel power button is shorting out and either making the machine turn on randomly or turn off randomly. Because these machines, the new Apple Pro keyboard doesn't have a power key on the keyboard, everyone is now pushing the power button on the computer itself, and apparently pushing it too hard or too deep or too many times is shorting out the circuit board behind the panel. Apple's working on a fix. Until an actual fix is released, if you are having problems with the machine turning itself on or turning itself off, unexpectedly, you can do a warranty replacement of the power board, and pretty much any Apple service center, including ours, will be able to do that for you.
And last but not least, our resident Linux guru, Tony Placilla from the Sutherland Group, is here. And Tony, you have in your hands the real news about Intel's Pentium 4. It's coming.
Yeah, it is. Monday, as a matter of fact, confirming expectations that the chip will launch on Monday, Intel officials outlined the company's plans to move its Pentium 4 into the mainstream PC market as rapidly as possible. Quote, they're initially releasing them in the 1.2 and 1.4 gigahertz range. For those of us still using 200 MMXs, that's pretty amazing. They're pricing it very aggressively. So initially, most of these high-end, and this is, let's be serious, this is high-end PC, they're going to be in the $2,200 range. You throw lots of RAM bus RAM at it and all the goodies, and you're at a $3,000 computer that, you know,
Kicked butt.
Even a year ago, the only thing that came close to it was an Alpha.
Yep.
So it's going to be interesting. Of course, we all know that you will be able to fry breakfast on the chip.
For those of you who heat your homes with wood stoves, you can save a lot of money on wood this year.
Yeah. Just set the server right in the middle of your house and turn it on.
And for cooling fans, we suggest you consult your local auto parts store.
No.
Lead from a 426 Hemi ought to fit just right.
Liquid nitrogen.
Liquid nitrogen.
Oh, that's
refrigeration storage. Yeah.
That's the, I forget off the top of my head the name of the company that's overclocking the snot out of the big AMD processors. They're using liquid nitrogen cooling. Yep. And they're getting supercomputer-like speeds on them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and probably a super frequent replacement of chips, too, aren't they?
Well, that too.
Oh, well.
Well, who was it that got a 486 running at 1,000 megahertz about 10 seconds?
No, it was running at 400 megahertz. 33 megahertz, 486 running at 400 megahertz. And
they played Quake for about 2 minutes.
For almost 2 minutes before it fried the chip. They had it in a freezer, packed with dry ice and beer.
Yeah. I've got the pictures of what was left when it was all done.
Well, of course, let's face it, in deep space at absolute zero or just above it, it'd probably work just wonderfully, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
Anyway, with that, we wrap up our computing news for this week on Soundbites. And if you happen to have any questions in the computing realm, we invite you to ask them right now. It's very easy to pick up your telephone and just dial us. The number is 716-263-9994, and our lines are now open for you right here on Soundbites, where we're happy to take on all your questions. Another place, of course, that you can ask your questions is right on our Soundbites website at www.soundbites.org. And just before we get started with the phone calls at 263-9994, which we will do in just a second, I want to pass along a question that was just asked recently. Someone who called the show a few weeks ago wanted to know how to upgrade from single processor to multiprocessor in Windows 2000, and said in addition to reinstalling the OS, which can be time-consuming with Windows 2000, he says you could use the device manager to switch from uniprocessor to multiprocessor support, or at least he's heard that, and he wonders whether or not that, in fact, is true.
That's a lovely question. As we all know, in NT, in order to upgrade, you did have to
reload the operating system.
But I don't know about the device manager in 2000. I will certainly look into that because I'm running 2000 right here. So we'll see what that looks like. But I don't know that that's true.
I remember reading about a resource kit, one of these 27 CD resource kits you could get from Microsoft that had utilities to do that.
I would imagine you probably could, though, if mm-hmm. Let's face it, Microsoft is getting better, and realistically, all it is just a different kernel.
Yeah. So, well, they took a lot of heat, too, from a lot of folks that had the dual Pentium motherboards running NT, and then all of a sudden they were told, oh, no, you get to wipe it all out and reformat and start over to add your other processor. And I know that was really hitting the boards big time because folks were saying wrong.
Yeah, not going to do that. I mean, especially if you've got a server with that capability. Mm-hmm.
And I just finally got it running.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got all the patches on it.
All right, this is a server. This means it is supposed to run.
Yeah.
And just go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll look it up, though.
716-263-9994. As we go to the phones on Soundbites, we go first to Elliot in Rochester. Hi, Elliot. You're on the air.
Yes, this is question for Tony, probably. I have a Roadrunner at home, but when I'm away from home, I have to get my mail. by the way, I have Linux at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no trouble with Roadrunner. Everything works fine. But when I'm away from home, I'd like to get my mail.
That's easy.
The only way I can get my mail at home, I mean away from home, with my laptop, for example, is to run a Windows partition and dial up through, say, blue light.
Yeah, I remember. Were you at the RCC meeting last
week? Right, I asked you the question.
Yeah, he's looking for a free internet service that supports Linux clients.
A free internet service?
Right, so he doesn't have to pay for an internet service that he only uses occasionally when he's on the road.
Mm, correct. That's one I'm not aware of. But you should be able to do it, actually. If you do it from a web-based application, there are. We had a similar question.
Well, he still has to dial in when he's not connected to Roadrunner, so he needs a dial-up internet right. provider that supports Linux.
And that's free. I know you can do it with Earthlink, but that's
right, yeah.
pretty ubiquitous.
Well, all you have to do is be able to dial up.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing...
Right, but he doesn't want to subscribe to a dial-up service when he's not using it now.
But using PPP...
Right.
Mm-hmm. The PPP dialer, he should be able to dial up to any internet service.
But what's even easier, though, is if he goes to most local libraries that have internet service, you can go into any local library, go in where they have web, you know, connection, and all you have to do is go to mailstart.com.
Or even webmail.com.
Right. And you just type in your email address and password. It goes off to your back to your Rochester, grabs your email, and pulls it up, and you can sit there and read them, print them off.
And that's what I use now with my laptop when I'm on the road or away from home. However, I have to maintain a Windows partition in my laptop, taking up space, in order to dial up to MailStart.
Well, if you use a public library who already has computers running Windows, that would work.
Yeah, but
the other thing you can try doing is go to the free internet services like Blue Light and Net Zero and Free WWW.
Right.
I think it was Free WWW. The issue is that the free internet services want you to display their ads while you're connected, so they have a custom client dialer in order to verify that you're running the ads.
Yeah.
But I think it was Free WWW that once I signed up for it on the web page, I could dial in using the standard PPP and didn't have to use their client. I know I've done it with one of the services. I just don't remember which one it was.
Here is a legitimate link. It's called Free PPP, Free Web, excuse me. It's 56K dial-up. There's 1,200 numbers nationwide. It's local in D.C. and is Linux friendly. There's no ads.
Okay,
which
good.
Is a nice one. It's
Free Web. That's
Free Web.
That's freeweb.com.
Yeah, I'm just pulling this off of a Google search, but it's Free Web. I would assume it's freeweb.com. I can take a look at it quickly.
Okay.
But they specifically mention that it's Linux friendly and that there's no ads, which is a nice thing.
Fantastic. I certainly will give that a try.
Okay.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for calling in. The Sound Bites continues. We take a call from Eugene in Rochester watching us on cable. Hi, Eugene. You're on the air.
All right. Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing great.
Good. I have a real audio player on my computer, and I don't know how to download a free, let me specify that, free MP3. how do I do that?
Well, it just got harder. There used to be a lot of places you could download the Napster, which was bought by BMG and now is not free. Scour, which just got sued out of existence. They're around anymore. There's still one called Nutella, G-N-U-T-E-L-L-A, at Nutella, that's G-N-U-T-E-L-L-A, .wego.com. You can download Nutella from that.
Yeah, we just caught on the news before the show started that MP3.com has been ordered to pay $53 million in copyright violation settlements.
But that's one of the few left. Them and there's a couple of others that I've only heard in passing.
Well, a lot of
that was very slow, but it works.
A lot of the record labels and record stores, Amazon and CDNow.com, will let you download the samples, like download the first minute of a song as an enticement to get you to buy the CD.
Mm. And some places will download whole songs, single cuts from a whole album of 12 to 15 selections and give you a little tease of the way you hear it played on the radio.
But it was a lot of sites that had MP3s downloads, but it seems everyone has a price on that, huh?
Yeah.
So they're going to copyright the whole thing now, huh?
Well, they always were copyrighted, but now the copyright owners are
saying
being able to enforce it better.
Yeah.
Right, and they certainly have the right to do so. The big thing, of course, is the copyright owners appear to be the distributors, not the musicians. So.
Yeah.
There's an interesting thing.
Yes, Courtney Love made us aware of that with a recent speech to one of the broadcasting associations in very forceful terms. I understand her address on that subject is out there on the web. I'm not sure what the URL would be on it, but if you can find it or go to a search engine and key her name into it, her comments are very interesting and worth reading. Give the artist's side of the thing, which hasn't been heard very much lately. Dwight and Irondequoit, you're next on Sound Bites. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you very much for doing this show.
Thank you.
I have a question, and I have a PC desktop and a PC laptop. I want to, the PC desktop has on it the Office program of Microsoft. I want to transfer that over to the laptop. And since it came already loaded, I don't have the CD, of course, so can I do that? Can I connect the two computers?
Not easily.
No, 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 no.
Yeah, wait a minute.
Yeah.
One, that's illegal.
Okay.
Well, if you move it from one computer to another.
No, what I'm saying is for him to get it without a way of either making disk or having the original CD, that's illegal.
Okay.
So whoever sold you the computer.
Yeah, whoever sold you the computer has to include the Microsoft Office CD or a way of making disk.
Right.
With a certificate of authenticity and the serial number.
Yeah. Right. They may have it all on what they call a recovery disk for everything that was bundled by the manufacturer with the computer, and I guess that covers it as long as the documentation is
still
there.
But they still have to have the certificate of authenticity to be able to plug in the key code.
Right.
Okay. All right.
But moving applications is very difficult.
Because of the registry and everything
right.
else.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so I just better reload it.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. And, of course, you better do it soon because Office 10 is going to be rented, essentially.
Oh.
So that'll be a little bit different.
Well, you know, I'm still meeting with a lot of clients that are saying, the heck with even Office 2000. Because, you know, how many things can you do in a word processor or a spreadsheet that aren't already being done that they more than overkill their needs.
Right, exactly.
May mean Microsoft is getting itself into big trouble with its future business plan.
Yeah.
Absolutely. One of the things that we've run into at work is any of the managers that have upgraded to Office 2000, all their ODBC connections to the Oracle database break.
Yeah.
And that's like really, really bad.
Yeah. The PC World Tips that comes out, Tip World, I mean, every day there's a patch to this or a workaround this for at least one or three of the products in Office Professional, or Premium even.
This new policy from Microsoft may be the Linux publisher's best friend.
Well, no, you'll see a lot of folks, though, stick to the, you know, they might, because they still might have their old copy of Office 97 around, and try these others and say, heck with that. It was working fine, and go back to the old.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen.
Yep.
I knew
okay.
there was a couple of good reasons.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for calling.
You bet.
716-263-9994. Call that number, and you'll get expert advice on your computing questions on this edition of Soundbites from WXXI, WEOS-FM, City Cable 12, Big TV, WBGT, and, of course, on the web at www.soundbites.org. I'm Bob Smith, and with me, Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Tony Placilla, and you when you call in. And next, we're going to hear from Larry in Rochester. Larry, you are on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. Good afternoon. The question I have is, I've got a Microsoft Word document. I've embedded a Microsoft chart in it. I turned off the color. I put it on grayscale for the picture object because it's going to a black and white printer. However, for the bars, I've used vertical slash bars, diagonal bars to indicate the different columns. If I send that file to a laser printer, I don't get the different kinds of diagonal slash bars, horizontal bars, whatever. I just get essentially all gray. If I send it to an inkjet printer, then I get the proper display of the bars in the data chart. Why would laser printers, and I've tried, you know, several now in the work office, so I can't go in and mess with the drivers. I guess the question is there a setting I'm missing, or...
You might have it set, and I don't know when they... I don't know which version of Office had this, but in one of them you could not only set the black and white, but also the dots per inch. And if your dots per inch were
that's in the printer setup
grotesquely
itself.
Wrong, then you got grayscale because it changed it for you.
Yes.
It usually works the other way. If you try to print a color chart on a black and white laser printer, it maps the colors to grays. but it shouldn't change the slashes.
What type of printer
is
it?
Well, it puts them so close together, you look like you've got grips.
What type of laser printer are you using?
There's Xerox laser printers.
What you might want to do is go in and check the properties of that, and in there it'll, one, tell, you know, there's usually a screen, and it'll tell you how many dots per inch you're printing that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a drop-down screen.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to up. You know, if it's only doing 150 dots per inch, and it's got, you know, the capability of doing either 300 to 600, bump it up to 600.
And you might also want to look to see if it's set to do grayscale or black and white.
I will check those out.
Okay. There you go.
Thanks.
Very good. Good luck, Larry. Thanks for calling in. And we're going to go next to Keith on the road. Hi, Keith. You're on the air with us.
Bob, how you doing?
Doing great.
Hey, I really like your show, but at times the questions are so esoteric, I have no idea what the heck these people are talking about. I mean, I'm lucky I can get my computer to turn on without flames shooting out of it.
We all have that attitude.
Then you win.
I got a couple questions. They may seem stupid, but for a neophyte,
Dave,
I need them answered.
Let's invoke your first law here. Ed Wright's first law.
The first law that I've been saying for over 11 years now is, and it's a tagline in all my emails, is the only dumb question is the one you don't ask.
Right. Okay. Well, I got a lot of them. I upgraded to ME. The file management on it is pretty nice. I like the way you can slide things around a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had problems where certain things, you can't put them in chronological. You can't put files. You go to a folder, you press view, and you want to go detail, and you can't put them in order from newest to oldest. It only goes from oldest to newest.
No, you can do that. You can still
you
can't. Do
it. I called, or I emailed
even if you click on the date, it won't sort them by date?
It will, but it won't save them. You have to do it each time you go there.
Oh,
so it always saves.
Oh, yeah. Well, Microsoft has been messing that up back since Windows 95.
Well,
because back in Windows 3.1, they had one place where I could sit there and say, auto arrange.
And remember settings.
And it remembered the settings and saved it for everything.
But it doesn't do it on the ME.
No.
But that's not the question. And I found another little glitch that I emailed and waiting for these morons to get back to me. So I'm thinking,
boy, aren't you polite.
Maybe ME isn't as great as it's made out to be, so I better back up my system. The question I have, I'm looking to buy a zip drive, an external zip drive.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm pricing it, and I go, well, for a few bucks more, I could get a writable CD player.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but then again, now correct me if I'm wrong. If I write it to the CD, it's there permanently, and I can't write over it unless I get the other.
Yeah, but so what? You can buy writable CDs for a half a buck.
But
rewritables are just a little bit more, and yes, you can erase them and rewrite to them.
But a zip drive is just like a giant floppy where you can
Correct.
Write into
well,
it.
Well, a couple of things though. A couple of things though, Keith. It's not that giant. At the most, it's 250 meg.
Well, for me, that's giant.
Okay.
Me.
And secondly, parallel, an external, if you connect it through the parallel port, is going to be dog slow.
Well, I got a USB port.
That'll help.
Okay. So would you say if I'm going to constantly back up these files, it would be better to back them up via a zip drive than, say, to a
CD? It'll be faster, yeah.
It'll
and
be faster.
The SCSI zip will be the fastest yet.
Mm-hmm. Don't confuse me with more.
No. The only thing you have to know is before you buy a USB zip drive,
yeah,
make sure you're using USB 1.1 or higher. 1.0 will not work and, in fact, will thoroughly screw up the rest of your machine.
Well, do you think there's 1.0s out there at reputable stores?
No. 1.1 is built into the motherboard. It's the USB chip that's on the motherboard to run the USB ports.
Well, I have no idea which USB chip I have. All I know is I got that funny little opening and the plug fits into it. So to me,
you should be able to find out either from the manufacturer of your machine or the documentation.
How old is the machine?
The manufacturer isn't around anymore, so you guys can laugh at me all you want on that one. But it was cheap when I bought it.
Well, I'm just Keith, the only reason I'm telling you this is because if you don't do it, it'll screw up your machine. Your choice. I don't really care. Okay?
All right. The other question I had.
Who cares?
Mm-hmm. The other question I had, I have 32 RAM, okay?
Yeah.
I want to up it to 64, then to 128. Now, people are telling me that, oh, it's easy, you open up the case, slide it out, you pop this in, and you're on your way.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, I'm a firm believer in Murphy's Law,
okay?
Is it that easy as you open up a case, you just pop it in and on your way?
If it's a Pentium style machine, you got to check to see whether it's PC100 or PC133.
And if you're not comfortable inside your machine, you might want to have someone do it and then watch them so you can do it yourself the next time.
Yeah. To give you an idea of my comfort level with doing things like that, when I wanted to upgrade the memory on my machine, I just brought the box into Dave and had Dave do it, which is a good idea, folks. And that's the best way to make sure you know it's going to be done right then if you have a professional do it. And with that, we're going to pause for a moment, and then when we come back, we will be back with more on Soundbites. Soundbites continues at WXXI Rochester, WEOS FM Geneva, on City Cable 12, on WBGT Big TV channels 40 and 26, and of course on the web at www.soundbites.org. Bob Smith with Nick Francesco, David Wright, Steve Ray, and Tony Placilla, and of course with you. And we reach into the mailbag in just a moment, but we do have a special program note for those of you listening on our master control station, WXXI, and WEOS FM as well. National Public Radio News is going to be providing 3 hours of special presidential election coverage today from 2 to 5, and that means you can join Juan Williams and the NPR correspondents for a special talk of the nation starting at 2 o'clock, going all the way until 5, until weekend all things considered.
Wait, I have to do it.
Yeah, that's about it. Now, that means that our normal broadcasts of Sound Money, of the 1370 Forum, and of Living on Earth will not be heard this week and this week only. They'll be back next week at their regular time.
Assuming the election is done next week.
Well, let's pray.
Indecision 2000 might go on over until next year.
Oh, boy. Now, this letter actually comes to us right from our bulletin board on the Soundbites website at www.soundbites.org, and it is a Mac question. Walter in Rochester has a Power Computing Power Center 132, running OS 8.1, generally serving him well, but the 2-gig hard drive is getting too full for him to install new applications or upgrade some key applications. Wants to upgrade Microsoft Office, Netscape, wants to go to OS 9. Besides a larger hard disk, he'd like to install a CD read-write drive, internal, to replace the 8X CD currently in place. And he has several questions about it. Can he install an ATA66 PCI card? Got two free slots, and replace his current SCSI drive with an 18-gig ATA drive. He wants it internal, no empty bays. Can he do that, first of all?
He can, yes. The issue he's going to run into, and for all the upgrades he's looking at, by the time he finishes putting all these upgrades in, he'd have been better off buying a new machine, which would be overall faster in the first place.
Then, of course, replacing the CD drive with that read-write, and then pulling out all the internal SCSI devices, how does he terminate the SCSI chain inside, and could he use his external SCSI zip drive and scanner?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, and some of the power computings also had an Ultra SCSI card in them in addition to the standard SCSI, so it depends on which model he's got and which drives it comes with.
But you're saying he's almost better off buying a new G4 Mac with all the goodies.
Starting at $1,599 or even an entry-level iMac for $800, you get a G3 350 with a 7-gig hard drive. So it's almost not worth putting any money into a machine that old.
You'd say go to your Mac retailer and buy yourself a new iMac or something else similar there, too.
Yeah.
And now, a new announcement, Nicholas, of something that we know you'll really like.
Yes, and this is only because we love you here at Soundbites. Don't get any ideas. What we have done is institute the Soundbites web ring. For those of you who are unfamiliar, for those of you who are unfamiliar with web ring technology, first, it's very hard to pronounce. And basically, what you do is you come and add your website to the Soundbites web ring. You're listed in the Soundbites web ring. Anybody can come and see you and find you and search for you, or search for sites like you. And on your website, you put a little piece of code, which in fact we send you to put on your website. So all you have to do is sign up. If you go to www.soundbites.org, you will see join the Soundbites web ring. And when you go to that, you will see that... it'll take you to the various pieces. of the web ring. You can join it, list the sites, go to a random site, or change your own information. Becoming a member of the site means that you are listed as part of our family, the website, the Soundbites
getting
family.
Getting all warm and fuzzy. I'm going to do when I leave here. Just going to have to post code.
You're just going to have to post code. So all you do to join is to click the Join the Soundbites web ring link, put in your title and description, the keywords, the URL of your website. And then if you're not going to put the our little piece of code on your main page, then we need to know the name of the URL of the page you're going to put it on. Then you pick a site ID that hopefully will be unique to you and a password, and then the name and email of the webmaster of that page, which is, well, you. And then we email you what the stuff is going to look like. If you want to see what it looks like, you can go to asknick.com and look at the bottom of the page, because that will show you. It's really, I left the very simple one. I've got the little logo on it, too. You do not have to use the logo. It's just a tiny little table, says the Soundbites web ring, and it's got three choices, next, random, or list. To see the next one in the ring, a random one from the ring, or the whole list. I just put it up, and in fact, there are two people listed already on the site, one of which is, of course, Ask Nick, and it hadn't even been advertised yet, so I'm kind of excited about that. But and there are a couple more in the I haven't seen the code on their website yet. Oh, that's the other thing. When you sign up, I go and check your page to see if you actually put the code up before I make you part of the web ring. Yeah. So you do have to do your part. But that'll get you on the site. It'll get you advertised. It'll show people that you are probably smarter, happier, sexier, and more interesting than all of your neighbors. So join the web ring today. I'd be very interested in seeing how many folks we get. It should be kind of a lot of fun.
Yeah, really.
And meanwhile,
vote early, though don't try to vote often. This isn't Miami. And let's talk about our poll. First of all, for the past week, we want to thank all 160 folks who took
part
in the poll.
Thank you.
Very good, as always. Excellent turnout. Love to see that. It was about Microsoft's latest security breach, which was a big item in last week's news. And you had several choices as far as your own response. The leader was, with 31%, doesn't bother me at all, and I use Windows. Let me worry. Is finally beginning to bother me, came in second with 28%. Then a little over 23% worries me a lot. And then a little less than 18% said, hey, it doesn't bother me at all because I don't use Windows.
Guess I didn't saturate it enough.
Well, that's my point. You Linux and you Mac people and all the other non-Windows folks out there, you had a perfect opportunity to make your voice known. And
let's face it, though, it's not really about Microsoft, their security breach. When you get right down to it and analyze what happened, it's a fact of system administrators, and I don't care what operating system you're running, system administrators not doing their job, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and somebody actually took me to test this week, sent me an email about it and said, you're always hitting on Microsoft. I said, well, you know what? 90% of our listeners use Microsoft, and they're their own system administrators for their own machine.
Absolutely.
And they need to know about this stuff. And the reality is that even professional administrators don't do their job. So for we non-professional administrators, well, I'm sorry, you non-professionals, I actually do this for a living, you need to be hit with this regularly, so eventually it will get through and you'll do it. Now, it's a simple fact. We need to hit you every week with the reminder that your system is vulnerable. Whether you have Roadrunner, Lightning Link, or a standard modem, you are vulnerable to somebody else's attack.
Yeah, literally, I was on last night, half an hour, doing nothing, and port scanned within 10 minutes of getting online on a dial-up.
Mm-hmm. So, there you go. Now, this week's poll relates to, again, I joked about Miami, but let's face it, some of the problems in Florida and elsewhere around the country makes us wonder if there's a better way to do this thing of electing somebody. And our question this week relates to that, and that is, would you like to be able to vote from your computer? They can already do this in a couple of Western states. Would you like to be able to do it here in New York, and would you like to see it become nationwide?
Wouldn't have to worry about punching the wrong hole.
You got that right. So, punching the wrong button...
They'd still find a way to screw it up.
Oh, yeah, that's true. You could. Punching the wrong button might be something else, but here we ask you, would you like to be able to say yes, no, or too close to call, recount?
Which well, that's kind of a don't know.
Yeah, another way of saying not sure, really, when you come right down to it, but rather relevant to the time, we think. 49 folks have already voted,
and 73.4% say yes, a little less than 1 in 6 saying no, and a little over 10% say too close to call. We have a pretty conclusive verdict so far, but that certainly could change because we'll probably get 3 or 4 times as many votes before the end of the week when we take a look again next Saturday at what you chose.
Definitely vote, www.soundbites.org. That is also where you can click to join the Soundbites web ring. I'd love to see a bunch of people. I will be diligently checking the inactive sites, that is to say the sites that don't have the software up, who registered but haven't checked them yet. So please join the Soundbites web ring. We'll see how many folks we can get signed up.
Absolutely. And as of right now, our mailbox is closed. Our phone lines are open at 716-263-9994. Bob Smith with Nick Francisco, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Tony Placilla, and you on Soundbites. And let's go next to Don in Brockport. Don, you're on the air.
Hi. I was trying to do a defrag, and I just started at night, and in the morning it still wasn't done, and it goes to about 10 or 12%, and then it starts over again at zero.
Yeah, you've got too many things running down in the lower right-hand corner in the sys tray.
Uh-huh.
Or good idea background to, faceless tasks.
Yeah, and you should shut most of those things down.
Okay.
And also, if you're running Windows Office, you may have something called FindFast running in the background. And so what you need to do is go into the control panel, double-click on FindFast icon, and shut it off, turn it down, destroy it, harm it in as many ways as you can.
The easiest way to do both a defrag and a scan disk is either in DOS mode or in safe mode when nothing else can be running.
Okay, and how would I do that? Go to DOS mode?
Shut down and restart in DOS mode.
Right.
And then do a scan disk and defrag.
Okay.
Right at the C prompt, you can type either one of those commands.
Scan disk or defrag.
Oh, just type defrag?
Mm-hmm. Well, start with scan disk, of course.
Okay.
And once you've done that, then you can just type defrag. I think you have to say defrag space C colon or scan disk space C colon, but that's it.
That has a happy facility once you're in DOS mode, is that's the only thing the computer is concerned about.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Okay. One more question. Mm-hmm. I had a computer at a business location that wasn't getting any use, so I swapped it for my home computer because it's a better computer. Is it easy for me to do a clean install on the home computer with Windows 98 and bring it back to the store?
Sure. If you would have to wipe out the system and do a clean install, you'd have to actually do a complete FDisk.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a Pentium machine?
Yes.
Because what you can do is if you go into the BIOS and have it boot to the CD-ROM first, and you have the Windows 98 CD in it,
mm-hmm.
you can have it load to there and have it boot to there. So it goes right out. It'll ask you, do you want to boot with the CD support? And you can, from there, then just take it to like a D prompt or whatever it'll come to, depending on your CD-ROM drive. You can format the drive and then continue on to reinstall Windows 98 fresh.
Yeah, the one caveat to make sure you've got the full version, though, not the upgraded version.
Oh, okay.
Because the upgrade version expects to see an existing version of Windows, so you'd have to install that first.
Well, no, you can fake it out.
Yeah, give it the disk?
You got to swap CDs.
Okay.
Right.
I don't know if I'm going to try that. Okay.
Okay.
Hey, one thing you might want to mention to people on that mailstart.com,
mm-hmm.
If you're using Roadrunner, you need your original password that Roadrunner issued you when you first signed up.
Yeah.
Right, it's the master. You have to use the master account, none of the sub account.
Right, and a lot of people don't know that.
The
right.
other trick is that when you're on Roadrunner, your mail server name is pop-server and smtp-server.
Right.
When you're outside of Roadrunner, you have to add the .rochester.rr.com if you're using MailStart or Webmail or one of the other mail programs,
because uh-huh.
you have to use the full domain name, not the internal Roadrunner name.
Right, well, I know I had trouble accessing my mail until I got my original password issued by Roadrunner. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for calling in. We go next to Dan in Pittsburgh. Dan, you're on the air on Soundbites.
Hi, guys. I love your show.
Thank you.
Multiple-time caller.
Great. Thank you.
This time I have a couple of questions, an easy one and an esoteric one. So let's try the easy one first, or at least one. We probably don't have to waste a lot of time on it. I have I've been trying to use Dialpad, which is one of those over-the-network long-distance call things.
Sure.
And I used to use a little button mic from an old Mac for the microphone, and it worked, but the audio was very, very low, weak and muffled.
Sure.
People could barely hear me.
Sure.
So I bought one of these fancy Koss headphones with the microphone attached, and the audio is exactly the same. It hasn't changed at all.
It depends on whether you're using a mic port or a line port on your sound card.
Right. Now, the port I got the mic plugged into has a picture of a microphone on it, and it doesn't have a line input. So I would think that's it.
So you probably need an amplified mic.
Wait a minute. You've only got two plugs in your two jack ports in the back of your sound card?
Yeah, the
speakers
audio
are in one, and
audio and the microphone. Right.
That's unusual.
It's like an old sound blaster.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does sound like you need something amplified. It doesn't
you
sound
might
like...
want? How old is the machine?
3 years.
You might want to look at going to maybe like a Sound Blaster Live card, or you know, a little bit better sound card. Because, you can get the best headset, but if the sound card is of a cheap quality,
right,
it's only going to be as good is that sound card.
Well, this came with a nice little speakers and all that. You know?
No, the speakers don't. Yeah. Again, the speakers are going to only get what the sound card sends it.
And the speakers are powered themselves,
yes,
which is why they sound better.
Yeah.
It sounds like you need a powered mic. You can get a signal attenuator at Radio Shack that will amplify the signal on the mic.
Oh, good.
But that would probably cost about as much as a new sound card.
Okay. Do we have time for another one?
Just quickly.
This is a Windows NT question. And I've started getting a message when I boot that it says one or more drivers fail to start. So I go into the event viewer to look at the system log, and I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 little stop signs in a row. The first one is a server source, and that one apparently has, I've been getting that for the last, for quite a while with nothing else, but now I got these four additional ones.
What's the server?
It says, you open it up, the value named copy of announce in the server's registry key, landman server / parameters, was invalid.
Okay, it expects that you're on a network.
Okay, I'm not.
That will do it.
You want
to turn off networking.
Okay. Well, see, sometimes I plug a laptop in and with a reverse.
Well, then you're going to just have to live with that
one. Fine, okay, so it says it ignored it, and I say that every time I booted for a long time.
Right.
So the next one is workstation. Initialization failed because the requested service redirector could not be started.
Same one.
Yeah.
Redirector is part of LAN manager.
Oh, okay. This is a new one. And the next one, there's three service control manager ones now. The workstation service terminated with a service specific error 2250.
That is most likely the same thing.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They do send. What patch level of NT are you on, first off?
5. NT4.0 with patch 5.
Right. Didn't everybody skip 5 and go straight to 6?
Well, you should get the latest one. But
I should get
what are the other two or three or two?
The computer browser service depends on the workstation service.
Yep,
sales.
Same thing.
Yeah, it's all network
related. Yep.
And the previous one is messenger service depends on the workstation.
Messenger service.
Yeah.
All the same.
So
same.
I should ignore this? It's fine.
Yeah. Well, you're going to get them until you're plugged into a network.
Yeah, but I just started getting them. It's strange.
Well, I'm a little confused about that. You should get them every time.
Yeah, because you're not plugged into it.
Great. Well, thank you very much, guys.
Sure.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Good luck. And we go next to Ray in Charlie. Ray, you're on the air on Soundbites.
Yeah, okay, thanks. I was just wondering, when it comes to searching, like in the address bar, it accumulates, past searches that you've done.
Sure.
And I'm just wondering, can you keep that from happening?
No.
No.
But you can erase it regularly.
Uh-huh.
There are a couple of ways to do it.
Okay.
One is to go into the Tools, Internet Options, and Clear History.
Okay. That's for the address bar?
Right. And what version of, what are you running for your browser?
Microsoft Internet Explorer.
Okay.
I think it's the latest version.
Right. That will do it.
Well, isn't there a way to set how many history sites it remembers? It's on the Mac side.
You can tell it how many
sites to remember.
Yes, you can.
If you set that to 0, then it won't save any of them.
Yeah, let's see. It saves the same day that you're searching. It saves that day.
Right.
Even if it's at 0.
Right. Also, if you open up Tools Internet Options and go to the Advanced tab, you can down, if you go down to the Security section, one choice is Empty Temporary Internet Files Folder when the browser is closed. You should do that.
Okay, I got that checked.
And
except, you know, I got Roadrunner. Is the browser ever closed?
No, not very often.
Yeah.
No.
Uh-huh.
Is it when I shut the engine? I mean, when I shut this computer down, is it closed then?
Yeah.
Then,
yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Like
yeah. Then you're done.
Okay.
Okay. Thank
Good
you.
Luck. Oh,
thank
I,
you.
Can I ask you one more?
Please, very, very briefly.
Okay. The AMD Duron processor, is it any good?
Yes.
Very okay. Thanks.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. We go to Howard in Pittsburgh next on Sound Bites. Hi, Howard.
Hi. A Linux question. I'm trying to make my life more miserable. And
how to do it.
Too much free time.
Yeah. I would like to know if it's, I don't have a file that's on the internet that I need to run Linux properly. I'm wondering, can I download that on the Windows side and then somehow get it from the C drive to the D drive in the partition there where Linux is loaded?
Absolutely. Are you sharing two separate hard drives, booting, dual booting?
I have two hard drives, and I have partition magic, boot magic load thing.
Sure. It's a fairly long process, and I tell you what I will do, though, is I'll give the actual command structure to Nick for him to post on AskNick.com.
I love it.
Basically, what you do is you tell Linux to mount the Windows partition as another part of its file system. It is capable of reading Windows partitions.
Okay.
And then you can just do a simple copy either from the command line or through a browser. But I'll give Nick the exact command line structure and detailed instructions on how to do it.
And I'll put it on the Ask Nick website, and also on the Soundbites website we have a listener links.
Great. Is there a Linux group in town?
Yes, Lugar. Linux Users Group of Rochester.
Okay, maybe you could put that too on the site if it's not already.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
That should be on
Thank
Jack's
you.
List.
Well, that's on Jack's list. If you go to Jack Greenkey, who has an exhaustive list of stuff, at members.visualcities.com/Jack1, the number one. You'll find a list of every stinking...
Don't we have a link off of our website?
We have a link on our website. So if you go to the listener links of Soundbites, Jack's list is linked there. And then if you just scroll down that a ways or search for Lugar, you'll find it. It's a ways down, but it's there.
Absolutely, and we remind you, you're listening to Soundbites, WXXI, WEOS-FM, WBGT, on Cable 12 and on the web. Bob Smith with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Tony Placilla, and next we go to Bill in the city. Hi, Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. This is an Outlook Express question.
Mm-hmm.
A while ago, I tried to email a file, and it was kind of too big, and it timed out a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now when I try to send an email, I don't do it very often. It tries to send the other first two attempts of the other
right.
message I gave up on.
Right.
Now, is there a file I can delete?
Yes. If you double-click on the outbox,
okay,
you will see all the messages that are waiting to be sent out.
Okay.
That will be one of them. Then you just click on that message and hit the delete key. And it will scream at you because, God forbid, you should delete a message. But then you just say, it's okay, not a problem. And then it goes away and you never see it again.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
Okay, we go next to Will in Charlotte. Hi, Will, you're on the air.
Hi. Quick question about Windows Millennium.
Yes.
When my computer goes to sleep or in suspend, and when I wake it back up, I have no sound. It took me a week to download the driver from the ASUS webpage in California because the server kept booting me. But that's the only problem I'm having.
Did you get the ME specific sound driver? Or was it a 98 driver?
No, it's an ME specific.
All right. And how old is your machine?
3 weeks.
3 weeks?
Yeah.
Okay. You shouldn't need this, but check with the folks who made your motherboard. Or who built your system.
Yeah.
And check with them to see if there is a BIOS upgrade.
I did. I flashed it already.
Okay.
Mm. The other thing, though, is I always usually turn the suspend mode off.
Yeah.
You know, if when I'm using the computer, I have it up and I have it running.
Right.
So normally what I do is go into the control panel, and in the power manager, I turn those options off.
It's the laptop.
Oh, in the laptop?
Yeah.
Well, you can lengthen the time that it goes into sleep mode.
But when I turn it off with a key, the sleep key,
mm-hmm.
and wake it back up.
Hardware.
Whenever it goes to sleep, and it's just done this recently.
Yeah, it sounds like a hardware or driver issue with the sound card.
I'm sure it is.
Because everything else works.
Yeah, and it's only rated for 98 and NT.
That's the problem.
See the driver. Yeah.
Yeah, Emmy has some real issues with older hardware.
Let's just say Emmy just has some real issues.
Well, yeah. But it is a problem, and people who are looking to upgrade should be very concerned that all of their hardware is perfectly supported, because otherwise you run into little glitches like this. And I am sorry, but I don't know that there's an answer yet.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Good luck. Sorry. Okay, and we have time for, I think, at least one more question, and that's going to come from Rick in the city of Rochester. Rick, you're on the air.
How you doing? Another quick ME question.
Okay.
When you boot the system, it does the clean sweep or cleans out all whatever?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How do you stop it from emptying your recycle bin, which I thought kind of defeats the purpose of saving files, you know?
You can turn that on and off in the setup. When you boot it up, it empties the trash.
Right.
Right. You can change that, I think. See, I'm not running ME, but I think it's a right-click on the trash, and you go, excuse me, preferences or properties for the trash.
Okay.
And you can tell it when to empty it.
All right, I'll try that quickly, too. I've heard you talk a lot about the Ghost program.
Yes.
Yeah.
You seem to say you love it. It's a great program. I bought it, but you got to have a doctor's degree to understand the manual.
No, well, you just go off the just look at the menus.
Okay.
Yeah, copy disk to disk or partition to partition.
It kind of walks you through. It's a no-brainer.
Okay.
The trickiest thing is making sure you pick the right source and the right target.
Yeah.
Right. You don't want to put your blank hard drive on top of your folder.
Right. The drive that you have the data on is usually always considered the master.
Right.
The drive that you're copying the data to is always going to be the slave.
Okay, so you can't copy two partitions. You can't ghost a complete hard drive that has two partitions, right?
Yeah,
that's disk to disk.
Yeah,
right. So you want to copy it all onto a new hard drive?
No, I want to put it on, I want to back up. Like, instead of using tape, I want to back up the CD-ROM.
Oh, you want to create an image.
Right.
There is a procedure in there to do that,
too.
That
would be disk to image.
Okay.
Right.
And it'll copy both, because I divided my new hard drive into two partitions.
Well, you can do partition to image, or you can do the whole disk to image.
Okay. All right.
It depends on how big they are, because you've only got 600 megs to put on a disk.
Right. Okay.
A CD.
Right.
All right. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate the call. Wish we had time for more. Unfortunately, we do not for this week. We have time only to review once again our poll question for this week, which asks, would you like to be able to vote from your computer? As of right now, with 61 votes in, we have 68.8% saying yes, 22% saying no, and 8% opposed to recall.
Four people have already joined the web ring. I'll be checking your site later today and adding you in. Thank you very much.
And, of course, we remind you, regular programming suspended for the next few hours on our master control station, WXXI. A special edition of Talk of the Nation with Juan Williams and the NPR News team. We're going to be looking at the latest on the election and giving you a chance to talk about it coming up next, right after this edition of Sound Bites, which is wrapping up. My thanks to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, and Tony Placilla. Thanks to the WXXI TV crew for making us look good, and to John Andrus at the audio board for making us sound good. And thank you all for taking part. I'm Bob Smith. We'll see you in 7 on the next edition of Sound Bites. ¶¶